Chapter 13. Dylan! A smile lifted the corners of Dylan's lips. He dreamed of Alyssa again. He had done so every night since he had left her standing on the steps of the castle, frustrated by his inability to glimpse her features. No nightmares had haunted him, only warm, passionate interludes with his beloved wise woman. Dylan, you must awaken! He frowned. This dream differed, though. She sounded urgent, frightened. She had been playful and affectionate in all of his other dreams. Alyssa? He murmured. Prying open eyelids that weighed almost as much as his horse, Dylan propped himself up on his elbows and searched the room. A familiar shadow, nigh lost amongst the others, stood several paces from his bed. Her hands, the color of moonbeams, emerged from her sleeves and rose to divest herself of her hood. Anxiety creased the beautiful features she revealed. This was no dream. Dylan bolted upright. Alyssa? Swinging his legs over the side of the bed, he rose and started toward her. How came you here? Did you follow me after I ordered you to remain at Westcote? Know you the danger you have placed yourself in? Cease, she commanded, thrusting a hand out in front of her to prevent him from coming any closer. He halted, astonished. Did she fear him? Alyssa! You must make haste, Dylan. Camden's men tarry below. What? His hand went to his sword. In a secret tunnel that opens onto a storeroom that contains several barrels of ale and little else. The door is well hidden and was overlooked by your men when they searched earlier. He took a step toward her, but stopped when she stepped backward. How know you this? I was there. They plan to kill your men whilst they sleep, and you with them, taking the keep from the inside out. Was not until then, until she took that step that placed her between him and the hearth, that he perceived that something was awry. His breath stopped, his eyes widened, his heartbeat increased. He could see through her to the glowing coals and insignificant flames behind her. Alyssa, he whispered, not knowing what else to say, how to ask her what was happening. You must leave now, Dylan, she urged him. You have little time. Go quickly and wake your men. Prepare them for Camden's assault and lead them to victory. Shock nigh rendering him mute, he nodded, ordered her to remain within the solar, and raced for the door. Gideon leapt to his feet as soon as he opened it. Dylan cautioned him to be quiet. Is it Camden, my lord? The boy whispered, wide-eyed. Aye, I want you to stay here and guard. He glanced over his shoulder and fell silent when he saw the room was empty. Alyssa had vanished as suddenly as she had appeared. My lord? He shook his head. Come with me, and make no sound. We must prepare the others. Darkness surrounded Alyssa once more, taking her by the hand and leading her back toward awareness. Whispering Dylan's name, she wished she did not have to leave him, and longed for his reassuring presence. Nay, 'tis Robert, a familiar voice responded. Open your eyes for me, he coaxed. She did so, and realized she lay in her bed at Westcote. Robert sat beside her on the edge, his face grave, eyes brimming with concern. A cold, damp compress draped across her forehead, alleviating the warmth burning there. Dread filled her. Had it all been a dream? A hallucination? Naught more? It had seemed so real. Dylan. Robert shook his head. Dylan is at Pinehurst, wise one. Alyssa, she corrected without thinking. Sitting up, she discarded the cloth that fell to her lap. What? Alyssa, my name is Alyssa. Is it? A stab of guilt pricked her. After the kindness he had shown her, she really should have told him earlier, but instead had selfishly cherished hearing only Dylan call her by name. Dylan. She did not doubt that her vision of Camden and his men had been accurate, because it confirmed her dream, but she knew not what to think of the rest. Praying that Dylan would remain safe, she started to rise. Robert held up a hand to hold her. You should rest. I fear your illness has returned. She shook her head and scrambled off the bed. Dylan needs me. He rose. I do not understand. Alyssa retrieved her empty valise and crossed to the shelves that contained her herbs and medicines. You have been unconscious for over 2 hours, Robert continued, shivering and muttering things beneath your breath. Your skin burned with the same fiery heat that I felt in your hands when you healed Dylan. Your skin is yet flushed with it. What has happened?
I cannot explain it.
You have not tried to.
She frowned.
Treachery stalks Dylan at Pinehurst. Camden and the remainder of his men will attack tonight, pouring into the castle from a secret passageway beneath it. I only pray my warning reached your brother in time, if it reached him at all.
What warning? You have not left my sight. And just what is it you are doing?
Packing my medicines and a few other necessities. I shall leave for Pinehurst immediately.
Nay, you will not, he countered firmly. You shall not step foot outside these walls until Dylan returns.
Satisfied with the herbs she had chosen, Alyssa stuffed a bundle of clothing into the bag next.
I shall leave with or without your permission, Robert.
Do not make me restrain you, Alyssa.
You would not.
He would not tie or bind her. She was certain of it.
Then I shall confine you to this chamber.
Nay, you will not, she stated, distracted. What was she forgetting? Alyssa studied the contents of her valise.
If 'twill prevent you from placing yourself in danger, I shall, he assured her, the determination in his voice reaching her at last.
Lowering the bag in one hand, she gave him her full attention.
Do not cross me on this, Robert, she advised him, half pleading, half commanding. 'Tis something I must do.
I have no choice. Dylan has entrusted me with your care. 'Twould be foolhardy to allow you to leave the protection of Westcote and ride into almost certain danger.
He meant it, she realized. He had no intention of letting her leave, even if it meant locking her in her chamber and setting men to guard her.
Panic vied with fury as Alyssa stared up at him. She had no time for this. She needed to see Dylan. She needed to be there to heal him if Camden caught him unawares. She needed to see that he was all right, that he still lived.
I will not let you stop me, she gritted, her resolve unshakable. Dylan needed her. He needed her. Could Robert not see that?
Nevertheless, I will, he bit out. Then his voice and expression calmed. I understand your concern, Alyssa. I shall dispatch men to Pinehurst post-haste so that we might know the truth. Until then, her patience snapped. Adrenaline and apprehension driving her, Alyssa grabbed the front of his tunic with her free hand and yanked him closer, forcing him, through sheer surprise at her actions, to bend until their faces were only inches apart.
You did not see what I saw,
she nigh shouted, trembling with fear and frustration. You do not know what I know. He needs me, Robert. Pinehurst is under attack, and Camden will not fight honorably. Dylan may even now be bleeding from wounds that treacherous dog has inflicted, and I am not there to heal him. Do you understand me? He could be dying, and I am not there. I should be there. Her breath catching on a sob, she shoved him away and raked quaking fingers through her hair.
You do not know what I know,
she repeated anxiously, seeing again all the men who had filled that cave. The men who waited to massacre the unsuspecting occupants of the keep, undetected by the guards posted outside until 'twas too late.
I will not rest until mine own eyes have confirmed that Dylan lives, she whispered passionately. I must see him.
The quiet that filled the room in the aftermath of her outburst was deafening. His face unreadable, Robert reached up with slow, deliberate hands and smoothed his tunic where she had grasped it.
Please, Robert, she implored. I will come to no harm on the ride to Pinehurst.
I know you will not, he said finally. I shall accompany you myself. She blinked.
What?
I shall take you to my brother.
Nay, you must remain here and protect Westcote in Dylan's absence.
Then you, too, shall remain.
A score of men may escort me, she blurted. Put Sir Michael in command of them. You trust him above all others, save Dylan. With such an impressive guard, I shall surely be safe.
He scowled. I do not feel right letting you out of my sight.
'Tis imperative that you tarry here a while longer, Robert.
Why?
I know not. 'Tis more than defending the castle.
She shook her head, helpless to explain.
I know only that the feeling that you must abide at Westcote is nigh as strong as my need to see Dylan.
He studied her long and hard, then nodded curtly. I shall choose carefully the men who will accompany you, and shall place Michael over them as you suggested. Be ready to leave in half an hour.
Thank you.
Striding resolutely for the door, he paused as he passed her.
Some of the harshness left his face. Do not make me regret this, Alyssa. Reach Pinehurst safely, and send me good tidings of my brother. She nodded, appreciating his concern. I will. The men waited nigh the base of the castle steps when she emerged. All were heavily armed and armored. All eyed her warily, uneasy with the task they had been given, to guard a woman labeled sorceress as she fled the keep in the dead of night. Alyssa could not blame them. The air was thick with menace, heavy with cloying humidity. The moon had chosen not to bathe the earth with its illusory light. In its place, a phantom fog danced around their ankles and wrapped skeletal arms around them. The horses picked up on the tension and pranced nervously, despite the soothing words offered by the warriors who stood beside them. Her cowl shielding her from the men's scrutiny, Alyssa descended the steps and strode past them. She took note of each man's identity as she did, and soon came to the conclusion that they had been chosen on the basis of three qualifications: strength, prowess, and a recent softening in attitude toward her. In fact, many of them had been amongst those who had surprised her earlier by smiling at her praise. Well, they did not smile now. She approached Robert, who spoke with Sir Michael. Noting her presence, Michael nodded, unsmiling. Wise one? Her hood dipped with her own nod of acknowledgement.
I regret having to disturb you all at this hour, but time is short, she whispered. I could not wait for the morrow.
Robert has explained as much. If you are ready, we can depart forthwith. Nay, Robert declared, overriding her agreement as he faced the anxious knights. Ere you leave, I will hear every one of you vow to protect the wise woman with your life. Much to Alyssa's astonishment, they did not hesitate to offer their oaths. Robert guided her over to a powerful black stallion, one of Dylan's favorites. Can you handle him? He asked softly as the others mounted their battle-hardened destriers. Alyssa stroked one hand down the muscled neck and shoulder of the beast only Dylan and Robert had been able to ride in the past. Aye, she answered, confident that she could. Good. Should you come under attack, he is the best mount to have beneath you, but I worry that he may be too spirited. He and I shall do well together. She handed Robert her bag and stood patiently whilst he fastened it to the back of her saddle. Once finished, he turned and stared down at her, his handsome face dark with misgivings. Worry not, Robert, she said, voice low, and placed a hand on his arm. He covered it with his own. I shall worry until you send me news of your safe arrival at Pinehurst and of my brother's well-being.
A messenger should arrive by week's end.
Does he not? I will assume the worst and lead an army in your wake. She nodded. When she would have pulled away, he tightened his grip on her hand. How Dylan must hate those robes, he murmured, beyond the hearing of others. 'Tis difficult to bid you farewell when I am unable to see your face. It must be 100 times harder for him. Tears threatened to choke her as she recalled Dylan's expression just before he had thundered through the gates to conquer Pinehurst.
'Tis difficult for me as well.
He hesitated for a long moment, his fear for her and Dylan inundating her and clutching at her heart. Fare you well, Alyssa.
And you, Robert.
Dropping his hands to her waist, he lifted her and set her in the saddle. Michael, he called. Michael directed his beige war horse over to Alyssa's. 'Tis time. The two turned their horses and, side by side, rode swiftly through the gates, the others falling in behind and stonily keeping pace. Darkness enshrouded the tarnished great hall. Only the diminishing flames of a single hearth allowed Dylan to see the figures creeping forth from the storeroom like rats looking for a bit of cheese. He and his men remained utterly still, cloaked by the shadows that swallowed the walls. Alyssa had been right. How had she known? Making only the slightest sounds, Camden's men slunk toward the pallets in the center of the room, pallets that supported lumpy forms covered with blankets, which they mistakenly believed were the men who instead watched them with carefully restrained wrath from their positions around the hall. Dylan strained to see the soldiers' faces as they closed in on their counterfeit prey. He had hoped he would be able to locate the one who had escaped his clutches ere he launched his attack, but 'twas too dark to see individual features. When a man stood over every pallet, the intruders raised their weapons and looked to the doorway of the storeroom. The auburn hair of the one who stepped through it glinted with red highlights. Camden. Camden nodded. The ragged army he commanded instantly buried their weapons in the hapless lumps of clothing. Dylan roared a battle cry as he and his men leapt forward. The slayers jumped and looked around wildly. Gleaming in the light of the dying flames, swords swung toward bodies frozen in shock. Steel met flesh. Cries of pain shattered the night. Panicked, Camden's men began to fight with feral desperation. Dylan saw Camden's auburn head disappear through the doorway of the storeroom and swore foully. Not this time, he vowed. The bastard would not escape him again. Stepping over his opponent's fallen body, Dylan began to cut a swath toward his absent enemy. There, he called, alerting Simon to their quarry's whereabouts. Nodding, Simon swung his sword and joined Dylan in forging a path. Camden's men preceded them, backing toward the doorway through which they had crept with such malicious glee earlier. Dylan could not tell if they sought to protect their cowardly leader, or merely wished to retreat and thought this their only means of escape. With swords clashing, curses spewing, and blood spilling, all flowed toward the storeroom. Bodies began to fall beneath the superior might of Dylan's men and formed a dam before the entrance, blocking access. Frustration mounted. Then Gideon and several other squires plunged forward to pull the bodies away. Dylan sucked in a breath as a blade barely missed Gideon's neck, but the boy was fast and remained alert enough to evade injury as he cleared the path. Camden's men, their panic rising, pried open the hidden door and hurtled themselves through it in a bid to flee with their leader. Dylan would have none of it. He and Simon followed, his men, those who were not still engaged in battle in the Great Hall, fast on their heels. They had just enough time to register a long tunnel, mayhap wide enough for a dozen men to stand shoulder to shoulder, ere Camden's ragged army began to extinguish the torches. "Gideon!" Dylan bellowed, even as he caught up to the first man and cut him down. "Aye!" he barely heard Gideon call from the storeroom. "Torches!" If Gideon responded, Dylan did not hear him. The sounds of battle resumed as Dylan and his men raced forward to end the retreat of Camden's. So little light remained that he would have been unable to tell friend from foe if his men's armor, far better cared for than that of the malefactors they fought, did not reflect the flames of the torch or two that remained. Such also made them clearer targets, however. Past the straining, swearing warriors in front of him, Dylan caught a glimpse of Camden. 'Twas too dark to see with whom he fought. Dylan had to look away to cut down his opponent. When he turned back, Camden was gone. Had he fallen? Escaped? The battle slowed as bodies crumpled to the ground. Gideon and several other squires poured into the tunnel, each bearing a torch in one hand and a sword in the other. Blessed light bathed Dylan and his warriors as they defeated the last of Camden's army, their shadows engaging in a phantom battle on the walls around them. Dylan took the torch Gideon offered him and began to search the faces of those fallen. Simon grabbed a torch of his own and examined the faces of the dead and wounded. "Was he here when we entered the tunnel?" he asked after a moment. "Aye, I saw him, but lost him in the fray." Dylan's frustration mounted as he continued to scrutinize the carnage, but failed to find the face he sought. "Here!" Simon called. Head snapping up, Dylan crossed to Simon and knelt beside the body his second in command studied. The fallen man lay face down, but bore the auburn hair for which Dylan's enemy had been known. Simon turned the man onto his back. Both grimaced. He appeared to have taken a mace to the face, amongst other things. His chest no longer rose and fell with breath. Though badly mangled, his features still managed to carry the look of Westmoreland, his father. "'Tis Camden," Simon said. Dylan nodded. "Aye." Relief relaxed the muscles knotted in his neck and shoulders. Camden was dead. 'Twas finally over. In the distance she saw him,
Dylan stood, silent and stoic, staring at the road leading to the unfamiliar gates below him. He was watching for her, waiting for her, was desperate for the sight of her. He, too, sought reassurance and prayed for her safety, knowing that somewhere out there her robe blended in with the night as she steadfastly made her way toward him. "I am coming, Dylan," she whispered. A hand gently grasped her arm, steadying her. Blinking, Alyssa realized Michael had just kept her from sliding out of the saddle. She had fallen asleep again and dreamed of Dylan. Over 40 hours had come and gone since they had left the safety of Westcott's walls. She had not slept for more hours than that and craved rest, yet she would not allow them to halt. Thrice she had dozed off and caught glimpses of Dylan, hazy, cryptic impressions of him seeing to his wounded men and disposing of the bodies of Camden's army. Did he know she was coming? Her heart leapt with anticipation, but she would not abandon her fears for him just yet. Such brief visions were new to her. She was reluctant to place much faith in them, particularly since they were not as strong as that which had assaulted her in Robert's presence. "I thank you," she whispered, struggling to sit straighter and stave off her fatigue. He released her. "There is a clearing up ahead. We shall rest there until dawn breaks." "Nay, we shall continue on until we reach Pinehurst's gates." "Pray do not argue with me, wise one. A woman of your advanced years must not push herself so. 'Twill make you ill." She sighed. She was exhausted, too exhausted to engage in another battle of wills similar to the one she had fought with Robert. "Does it trouble you, Sir Michael?" she posed in her whispery voice. His brow creased. "What?" "When others do not allow you to perform tasks you are more than capable of carrying out because of the weakness they perceive in you. Does it trouble you?" His lips tightened. "I am no weaker than they." "Some believe otherwise." "They are wrong." "Then it does trouble you." "Aye, sorceress, it troubles me," he grated. She nodded. "Now reverse our conversation. Apply your frustration to me, and cease grappling with me over this. I give you now the same words I gave Sir Robert. I will not rest until mine own eyes have seen Lord Dylan. If you have to tie me to the saddle to keep me from falling out of it and slowing us down, so be it. But we will none of us seek shelter for the night. I wish to have crossed Pinehurst's drawbridge by the noon hour on the morrow."
Turning her head, Alyssa awaited his response. Michael studied her dark form for several long moments. "As you wish, wise one. I meant no insult." She smiled, though he could not see it.
"I know, and I appreciate your patience. You must all be nigh as weary as I."
He shrugged. "We are accustomed to such, healer. You are not." The clearing Michael had mentioned came and went on their right. Hopefully the men would not be too angry with her over her insistence that they keep moving. Michael seemed to understand.
"I hope you did not mistake my words," Alyssa said, worried that she may have injured his feelings. "I merely sought to make a point."
He regarded her curiously.
"I see no weakness in you, Michael. You are one of the strongest, bravest men under Lord Dylan's command. Anyone who fails to comprehend that is too great a fool to look beyond what they consider your flaw and see you for what you are."
She nodded for emphasis, knowing that there were many men at Westcott who underestimated his abilities.
"And I assure you that neither Lord Dylan nor Sir Robert are fools. Nor am I. We know your true value."
For a moment, he did not seem to know what to say. She feared he had received very little validation in his 26 years.
"I thank you, wise one," he said at last. "'Tis good to know there are some at Westcott who believe in me, and to hear those words come from you, who know the extent of my illness, gladdens my heart."
Alyssa smiled, pleased she had spoken. He continued to stare at her, almost as though he could see through the midnight material that enshrouded her.
"It makes me wonder, though, if I have not been as great a fool as those who have misjudged me," he murmured, alluding to his own beliefs regarding her.
Surprised, she faced forward.
"We are all fools at some point in our lives."
"Aye," he agreed.
but some are greater fools than others.
Dylan stood on the wall walk nigh the barbican, gazing out over the pitted road that led to Pinehurst. The sun shone high overhead, bleaching the sky to a pale, pale blue. A nigh-constant breeze bent the trees in an awkward dance and made the tall grasses in the meadow between forest and wall ripple like ocean waves. She was close. He could feel Alyssa's presence growing stronger. Thrice he had seen her since her mysterious appearance in the solar the night of Camden's failed invasion. Her face and form had been ghostly, indistinct, not as vivid as they had been that first night. Her voice, when she had spoken, "I am coming, Dylan," had been barely audible. One might even have surmised it a trick of the wind or a figment of his lonely imagination, and he did wonder. Those around him appeared to have seen and heard naught, though he had been in the company of others each time he had glimpsed her. It puzzled him. Alyssa's warnings were normally delivered in person and stemmed from dreams, not prophetic visions. Those, she had said, were only granted her mother. As for Dylan, the only dreams that had toyed with him in recent years were nightmares, spawned by his time in the Holy Land and, more recently, erotic dreams of hours spent making love with Alyssa. So what did it mean? What had changed? Or had anything? Simon approached and leaned into one of the crenellated openings in the wall. Dylan had felt the intense scrutiny of his second-in-command often in the hours he had stood there.
"What do you watch for, Dylan?"
His gaze did not stray from the road.
"You will see it with your own eyes soon." "You anticipate trouble?"
"Nay."
"What then?"
"Have the men raise the portcullis," he pronounced in lieu of an answer. Brows drawing together, Simon opened his mouth to respond, then closed it. He knew better than to question a command issued by the Earl of Westcote, friend or no friend. Turning on his heel, he left to convey his lord's orders. Soon the clunking and clanking of the heavy metal gate raising assaulted Dylan's ears. Simon returned and, without saying a word, joined his friend in a silent vigil. Not 5 minutes later, the first figures rounded the bend in the road and came into view.
"Riders approach," Simon announced unnecessarily, straightening.
Dylan nodded, squinting against the sun's brightness.
"At least a score, riding hard," his companion continued. "Too far away to see what banner they carry."
"They carry my banner," Dylan stated with absolute certainty. Simon darted him a look, then leaned forward and squinted in an attempt to confirm his words.
"'Tis as you say. I was not aware you had sent for reinforcements."
"I did not." A deep scowl creased Dylan's forehead as he searched the figures for the one he awaited with scarcely contained impatience. His gaze roved one armored knight after another until he found her. There, in the center, riding beside Michael, protected in front and behind. A small, dark figure that could only be Alyssa. Relief swept through him. "At last, she is here. She made it safely." Yet, his pulse leapt with trepidation. She was slumped forward over her stallion's neck, Michael's careful hold on her arm the only thing keeping her in the saddle. Ignoring Simon's rapid-fire questions, Dylan turned and raced for the gatehouse, down the stairs, and into the spacious single bailey the castle offered. The rumbling of hooves meeting dry, packed earth accompanied the party's arrival as the horses cantered through the barbican.
"Secure the gate behind them," Dylan ordered Simon, who was fast on his heels.
A look of sublime relief hit Michael's features when he marked Dylan's approach.
"My lord, I know why you are here."
Grabbing the reins of Alyssa's horse, he brushed Michael's hand aside and steadied her with his own.
"What happened to her? Is she wounded?"
"Nay, she is unharmed."
Dismounting wearily, Michael stared up at the wise woman and shook his head.
"She is simply exhausted. She refused to halt, and she would not ride with me or any of the others in order to find rest, despite my urging."
He shrugged helplessly.
"Forgive me, my lord, but I did try. I knew not what else to do short of forcing her."
"I understand," he said, wishing he could see her face, to confirm with his own eyes Michael's words. "She can be quite stubborn at times."
"My lord?"
Some of the tension left him at her familiar whisper.
"Aye."
Her cowl lifted as she straightened sluggishly and turned to face him.
Have we reached Pinehurst, then?
Aye, you have. He could not stop the tender smile that crossed his lips, despite their audience. Most of the men who had accompanied her as her guard remained seated atop their destriers, watching them with avid curiosity. Allow me to help you dismount. At her slow nod, he placed his hands on her waist and lifted her down. Had he not maintained his hold, she would have crumpled to the ground. Her hands, cloaked in her customary midnight garb, came up to grip his biceps. He could feel her trembling, and wanted not more than to yank her into his arms and hold her. But he could not until they were inside, away from prying eyes. At last she raised her head.
You are well?
Aye. Your message reached me in time.
Message?
He heard Simon mumble as he stepped up to Michael's side. She nodded, her grip tightening as she wavered where she stood.
I was so afraid that it had not. 'Tis why I would not stop until I reached you. I feared you would be wounded.
Well, you may rest easy. 'Tis over. Camden's plot failed, and he and his men are dead. Come now, you are weary from your arduous journey. Ignoring his fascinated men, he draped an arm around her shoulders and turned her toward the castle. He knew not what shocked them more, that he had performed the act with such casual affection, or that she had allowed it, leaning into him to let him take some of her weight. They had only gone a few steps when she stopped short.
Wait.
Alyssa faced the men.
I thank you for escorting me with such patience and diligence. You are all strong, loyal, honorable men. I could not have asked for a better guard.
Several mouths dropped open. A few rough-hewn, beard-stubbled faces flushed. Heads dipped and nodded in response. Michael sketched her a formal bow.
The honor was ours, wise one.
You are very kind, she whispered.
When she swiveled to face the dungeon, she staggered into Dillon.
Easy,
he murmured as he steadied her. Supporting her with a hand at her elbow, he practically held her upright.
Can you walk?
He whispered.
I must,
she returned, valiantly forcing her shoulders back and her head up, determined to maintain a show of strength.
Then we shall take it slowly.
The men behind them remained motionless, watching as he and Alyssa painstakingly made their way to the steps that led up to the castle doors. How badly he wanted to scoop her up into his arms and cradle her against him, to let her head rest against his shoulder, feel her face burrow into his neck as he carried her to their destination instead.
Do not let them think me weak.
They dare not, after the way you drove them to cover so much ground in so little time. He knew of no other woman who could have pushed his men, all of whom towered above her and were twice her weight, thrice if you counted their weapons and armor, so hard, forcing them to do her bidding and flattening any protests that arose. Who else but Alyssa could have made it to Pinehurst so quickly? Who else would have even dared try, not knowing what danger might confront her upon reaching her destination? As usual, she had placed his safety above her own. 'Twas an affliction of hers he would soon have to cure.
'Tis not an affliction,
she whispered lethargically as they stepped through the massive double doors. Dillon's head snapped around. What?
My need to see you safe. 'Tis not an affliction, but love that feeds it. Should that not please you?
Her words began to slur with fatigue. Dillon wondered, heart pounding, if she was even aware of what she had said. Did she mean it? Did she truly love him?
Of course I am aware. And I meant it. I love you, Dillon. I wanted to tell you ere you left Westcote, but did not think I had the right.
Which answered the other question that had arisen, the question he had dared not even ask. Stopping at the foot of the stairs that led to the sleeping chambers above, she swayed as she peered up them.
Oh, Dillon, I do not think I can climb those stairs. I am so weary. If no one is looking, would you please carry me?
Carefully guarding his thoughts, he swept her up into his arms, not giving a damn if they had an audience, and carried her up the stairs and into the solar, kicking the door closed behind them.
He crossed to the large, comfortable bed he had spent the last 3 nights in and lay her down atop it. Only then was he able to push back her cowl and gaze at the face he had so swiftly grown to cherish. Sleep already claimed her. Drawing gentle fingers down her pale cheek, Dylan sat beside her on the bed and savored the sight of her. Her long raven hair was pulled back in a loose braid. Several resilient curls had sprung free about her face, refusing to be bridled. Dark circles pooled beneath her eyes. So deeply did Alyssa sleep that she did not stir whilst he divested her of her clothing and slipped her naked beneath the covers. Her hands were free of the paints she often used to give the illusion of age, her arms as limp as a rag doll's. Smiling, Dylan leaned over to stroke her hair and pressed a kiss to her temple. "Sleep, love," he whispered. "We shall talk when you awaken." And they would talk, he vowed as he exited the chamber, went below, and sent Gideon up to stand guard. Aye, they would talk, for Dylan was suddenly quite certain that she did indeed experience the same visions her mother did, as well as the ability to project them into the minds of others over great distances, and, mayhap more disturbing, that she possessed the ability to read his thoughts as clearly as her own. Why had she lied? Why had she hidden it from him for so long? And how could she continue to deny it after today? For, exhausted by days without sleep, she had grown less cautious and answered his thoughts as easily as though he had spoken them aloud. Thinking back to their tour of her garden at Westcote and their recent forays into lovemaking, he suddenly understood that it had not been the first time she had done so, either. There had been quite a few instances in which she had responded to his unspoken ideas and desires. He had marveled at the time over how well she knew him, thinking she simply reacted to his emotions, all that she had claimed she could read. Yet such was clearly untrue. Dylan could not bring himself to believe that she intended to harm him in some way with the knowledge she gained from perusing his uncensored thoughts. Nay, she had given him too much of herself for that, had nigh sacrificed her life for him. She had ceded her love and placed her heart in his, admittedly clumsy and less than capable hands, always putting his well-being and happiness before her own. Why, then, had she lied? Could it be that, despite her professed love, she did not trust him? Did she fear his response should he learn the true extent of her gifts? Did she think he would spurn her, believing, as others did, that she was the devil's get? Surely not. Not when she knew how deeply he loved her, how completely he adored her, as she must know. Several of the men who had escorted Alyssa to Pinehurst entered the great hall and trod dully over to the trestle tables that had been erected for them. Dylan watched from his place nigh the great hearth as timid women, still far too thin, brought food and drink from the kitchen to bolster the tired soldiers. He was both surprised and displeased that Robert was not amongst them. He had placed Alyssa in his brother's care with the expectation that she would not be allowed out of his sight. But, having searched the face of every man who had acted as her guard, Dylan knew that Robert had remained at Westcote. Michael entered the hall. Dylan resolved to ask him news of Robert and strode toward the table to join him. His questions surrounding his discovery of Alyssa's dishonesty would have to wait until she was rested. Then Dylan would demand his answers, as well as her trust. Chapter 14. Alyssa assumed at first that she dreamed. Dylan's mouth closed over the sensitive tip of her breast, tasting and teasing, tempting her to respond. His large, rough hands spread fire along her body. Moaning, she tunneled her fingers through his thick, dark hair and urged him closer. Instead, he abandoned her breast and kissed his way up her neck. "Forgive me, love," he whispered. "I could wait no longer." A smile stretched her lips. Opening her eyes to the dim light of a curtained bed, she wrapped her arms around him and stroked his broad, muscled back. "How long have I slept?" He captured her lips in a long, deep kiss, plundering and exciting her to a fevered pitch.
since you arrived yesterday, shortly after the noon hour. 'Tis morning now.
So long? She practically purred when he nipped the sensitive skin beneath her ear, then laved it with his tongue, his hand finding her breast at the same moment.
After holding you in my arms all night, he continued, his warm breath tickling her ear and sparking a shudder of pleasure, and stroking your soft skin.
The rough hand at her breast slipped to her side, followed the curve of her waist, over her hip, and down her thigh.
After hour upon hour spent with your sweet, luscious body pressed to mine.
When she raised her knees in response, he settled himself more firmly against her, teasing her with his arousal.
I find my patience has come to an end.
She arched into him, eager for more.
Dylan groaned. I burn for you, Alyssa. I tried to wait, wanted you to rest, but I am so greedy for you. I have to have you.
His hands shook when they renewed their rough, tender exploration of her body, seeking all of the places that would bring her pleasure.
I have never known such need as this, he admitted, voice husky as he lowered his mouth to feast on her breast once more.
Her gift told her he truly did feel remorseful, as if awakening her to such ecstasy was somehow selfish of him. But he would hear no protests or condemnations from Alyssa. Her body felt rejuvenated, responding eagerly to the touch of his hands and lips, as it should. She guessed she had slept almost 20 hours, could not even remember entering the castle or sending word to Robert of their safe
arrival. She groaned. Robert!
She had not sent him the missive. She had sworn she would as soon as she arrived, knowing how he worried about his brother. But she had fallen asleep before she could. Now 'twould take a day longer to reach him.
Dylan's body went still. For several seconds he seemed not to breathe. Then, flattening his hands on the bed to either side of her, he slowly raised his upper body until his arms were straight, his elbows locked, and he could glower down at her.
Alyssa's eyes widened with shock when they met his, and she saw the desperate need to do violence in them. Rage, unlike anything she had ever felt before, abruptly screamed through him, forcing its way into her at every point they touched and scorching a path to her heart. Mingled with it was such incredible anguish that she could barely suppress it enough to seek its cause. Dylan thought she had been imagining 'twas Robert making love with her. Appalled, she gaped up at him as he swiftly lifted himself off of her and backed away to the far side of the bed, dragging most of the blankets with him. Cool air flowed over her like tranquil river waves, soothing her fevered skin, but doing little to assuage her rising ire.
"I imagined naught of the sort!" she exclaimed.
Sitting up, Alyssa yanked a blanket away from him and dragged it up to cover her breasts.
"How dare you accuse me of such!"
"I do not recall accusing you of aught," he snapped.
"I know not whence came this erroneous belief of yours that your brother is more proficient with women than you are, but 'tis beginning to twist your thoughts," she nigh shouted. "The fact that he has bedded more women than your entire army does not in any way suggest that you cannot make women scream with just as much pleasure as he can, more so were I to judge by my own response to you."
He blinked in surprise, then frowned, clinging to his anger.
"You called his name."
"I did not call Robert's name because I was imagining 'twas him making love with me." She could not halt a slight grimace at the thought of anyone's hands other than Dylan's touching her so intimately.
"I did so because I only then recalled my promise to him."
"Which was?" he asked neutrally.
"I vowed I would send him word of your welfare and news of what has transpired here at Pinehurst. He was so worried about you, Dylan. We both were. He would not let me come to you until I revealed the vision I had had of Camden's perfidy. 'Twas a struggle to make him understand my urgency even then, and when he did, he felt it too."
Alyssa bit her lip, guilt consuming her.
"I should have sent word that you were safe as soon as I arrived, but I was so weary. I can barely remember you helping me down from my horse."
Dylan's jaw slowly unclenched. "I sent Robert word of your safe arrival and of Camden's defeat yesterday, whilst you rested." She relaxed, relieved that Robert would soon hear that his beloved brother was well and would not be made to wait because of her negligence.
"Thank you,"
he nodded curtly. Now explain to me how precisely you discerned my accusation, since I never voiced it. Though Dylan appeared much calmer now, Alyssa hesitated, almost afraid to tell him, afraid he would think her freakish or, at the very least, be angry that she had not confessed it sooner and consider it a violation of his trust. Alyssa? Sighing, she relented.
There is something I have not told you, Dylan.
He stared at her expectantly.
I am different, she began.
His expression lightened as his lips twitched. Think you I have not noticed this ere now? Dropping her gaze, Alyssa plucked at the bed linens.
Nay, when the other gifted ones came to heal my wounds and restore my life, it changed me. I am different now.
She risked a glance up at him. He sobered. In what ways?
Well, there are the visions. When I saw Camden's army beneath the keep, 'twas as if I were there, Dylan, walking amongst them, stepping over their feet. One of them seemed to look right at me, and I could feel the dampness of the cave, smell their foul stench. For a moment I stood right behind Camden, listening to him boast as he outlined his strategy. As soon as I realized what he intended, I sought to warn you.
You did. I saw you as clearly then as I see you now, standing over there by the hearth and commanding me to awaken and call my men to arms. I thought you had disobeyed me and followed me to Pinehurst against my wishes.
Alyssa stared at him in astonishment. You saw me that clearly?
Aye. I knew not what to think when I set Gideon to guard you only to turn around and find you had vanished.
She swallowed. She had known some part of her message had reached him, but this... I have had other visions on the journey here. I saw you with your men, twice, and watching for me from the wall walk.
I saw you as well, more faintly than before. None around me did, but I could hear your voice, whispering that you were coming.
Distracted for the moment, she pondered the significance of that, the contradiction in the visions and possible causes of it. Do you suppose 'twas because I was weary? The reason the first was clear and the others less so?
I know not of these things, Alyssa.
She frowned. Nor do I, but I fear I must learn, and quickly.
These visions did not begin until your healing?
Nay, the dream I had of Camden stroking the cats, that is how the future normally visits me. Dreams that lack the clarity present in these more recent visions.
What else?
There was an air of anticipation about him as he awaited further revelation. I also...
She faltered. Alyssa?
I seem to have acquired the ability to...
Swallowing, she said the last in a rush that emerged barely coherent.
Read others' thoughts.
Dylan's eyes locked with hers, forbidding her to look away.
Could you read my thoughts ere your healing?
Nay,
she answered in a small voice.
Not at all?
Occasionally, if I concentrated very hard, and you consciously sent your thoughts to me, as you did when you admitted you wanted a wife, I was able to form a general understanding of them, but I could never read them as clearly as I do now.
He nodded. And after your healing, when you realized you could?
Your emotions affect me much more strongly now, Dylan, overwhelming me at times. I assumed at first 'twas them I read, and that the rest was my imagination. I did not want to believe 'twas aught more than that.
Is it only my thoughts?
Nay, 'tis anyone I touch. But you were the easiest for me to read, most likely because I care for you more than anyone else.
The tension seemed to melt from his body. Why did you not tell me? Why keep the changes hidden?
She shrugged one shoulder. These new gifts frighten me. I do not understand why I have acquired them.
The gifted one who spoke to me, the tall fellow who called himself Seth, said healings affect you differently than they do me. I thought at the time that he referred to your fever. Mayhap this is what he truly meant. Mayhap, when the other gifted ones healed you, you absorbed not just their healing energy, but some portion of their gifts.
But I cannot control them.
Her voice rose as her agitation increased, and she poured out her fears.
Whenever I try, I find only pain. I was in my chamber when the vision of Camden struck me. I lost consciousness, Dylan.
It took Robert over 2 hours to awaken me. My body was hot to the touch. He said I had been quivering and muttering something unintelligible. I have no memory of that. And this morning, moments ago, when you became so enraged and I tried to read your thoughts, I felt as though I were being seared inside by the flames of a torch. How can I accept these gifts when I cannot check them? How can you? And there lay the heart of her concern, Dylan's reaction, his acceptance or rejection of the transformation taking place within her. Would he still love her now that he knew? Would he spurn her? He reached a hand out to touch her face, but frowned and withdrew it at the last moment. Her vision blurred as tears filled her eyes. She had her answer. "Do not weep, Alyssa," he whispered, yet came no closer. Swiping at the tear that slipped down one cheek, she shook her head and bit back a sob. "This is the true reason I would not tell you."
"What is?"
"I feared you would not want me, that you would spurn me. And you have. You cannot even bear to touch me."
His dark brows slammed together. "Alyssa, you just told me that the last time I touched you it caused you pain. I do not do so now because I do not wish to harm you. But that does not mean it is not killing me to keep from wrapping my arms around you and squeezing you so tight our heartbeats become one."
Sniffing, she stared up at him and drew in a fractured, hiccuping breath. "It is
I."
He said it so forcefully she could not doubt his sincerity. Joy leapt in her breast. Smiling, she threw back the covers and started to launch herself at him.
"Wait!"
Dylan threw up his hands to ward her off. Disgruntled, she frowned and sat back on her heels.
"What?" "I do not want to hurt you."
"You will not." To prove it, she reached out, took one of his hands in her own, and brought it to her cheek. "See? No pain." Turning her head, eyes still clinging to his, she pressed a kiss to his palm, nibbled her way up his index finger, then drew it into her mouth and caressed it with her tongue. "Only pleasure." Growling, he dove at her and drove her back against the pillows. Alyssa squealed in surprise. His lips found hers amidst the curtain of her hair and proceeded to kiss her breathless. Rising above her, he grinned down at her. "We shall ponder your new gifts later. Right now, I am more interested in exploring this pleasure you mentioned." She laughed and murmured teasingly, "Then I shall let your thoughts be my guide." Leaning up to bite his chin, she smoothed her hands over the muscles of his shoulders and back. "Whatever you desire, whether you speak it or nay." She got no further before heated images flooded her mind and inflamed her body. Burying her hands in his hair, she pulled him down for a devouring kiss, then pushed him onto his back and straddled him, restraining him with a hand on his chest. Dylan's mouth dropped open. Verily, he had not taken her seriously. The images had just popped into his head in response to his arousal and the press of her body against his, her hands on his skin, her sultry voice washing over him, and those lips made him burn. So when she lowered her mouth to his chest and began a slow descent down his body, doing exactly what he had unconsciously asked her to, he groaned both in shock and in ecstasy, and buried his fingers in her tousled hair. Her small hands curled around his arousal as she lowered her mouth and tasted him, first with a long, slow lick. Lightning sizzled through his veins. Casting him a look that was both shy and brazen at the same time, she swirled her tongue around the sensitive tip, closed her lips around him, and drew him in deep. "Alyssa." She read his need, his desires, his every thought easily, her mouth enacting every fantasy until his body was as taut as a bowstring and he teetered on the brink. Growling, he drew her up and flipped her beneath him. Parting her legs, he settled himself between them and rubbed his throbbing shaft against her moist center. She was ready for him. Dylan plunged inside her, delighting in her moans of ecstasy as she wrapped her arms around him, her small hands sliding down his back to grip his backside and urge him on. She was so tight, and as needy as he,
Dylan held not back, muscles bunching as he drove himself into her whilst she arched up to meet his every thrust, the pleasure building and building until they found their release together. Panting, Dylan stared down at her, so very much in love with her. He brushed a gentle kiss to her lips, then rolled them to their sides. "Alyssa," he whispered, then said not more. Seeming to understand, she snuggled closer and rested her head against his chest.
"Here, love."
Having finished braiding her hair, Alyssa looked over her shoulder. Dylan stood nigh the door, fully dressed, with her black robe dangling from his hands. Warmth unfurled inside her as she approached him and stood patiently whilst he carefully enshrouded her in darkness. "I wish sometimes that you could read my mind and heart," she told him, smiling as he clasped her hands and brought her fingers to his lips for a series of kisses. "If I could, what would I see? How much it gladdens me to hear you call me that, to have you touch me and look at me so tenderly." Guiding her hands to his waist, he cupped her cheeks with his own. Calloused from years of wielding weapons, they slid in rough contrast over her smooth skin.
"If you see me as clearly as you say you do," he whispered, "then you know that I love you. I love you, Alyssa."
Her throat tightened. She had waited so long to hear those words fall from his lips. How she wished she were free to act upon them, that they both were. Unable to speak, she lifted her lips to his for a slow and sensuous kiss, full of the love she bore him.
"And I have looked into your mind and heart," he murmured, pulling back to gaze down into her eyes. "You led me there yourself only yesterday."
"I love you, Dylan. I wanted to tell you ere you left Westcote, but did not think I had the right." Alyssa froze, her heart thumping so loudly she could hear naught else. Naught save her own voice replayed in Dylan's mind, confessing her love. "I love you, Dylan." She shook her head, as if she could deny the truth of the words she had spoken.
"Let me hear them again," he beseeched her. "Give me the words I wish for the most, now, when you were no longer walking in your sleep."
A kind of panic seized her.
I...
His thumb swept across her lower lip in a brief caress.
"Never mind," he murmured, not quite able to hide his disappointment. "I am a patient man when it suits me. I shall wait until the thought of speaking them does not strike such fear in you."
"I am not afraid, Dylan," she denied. "'Tis only that what you are asking, what you want between us is—"
"'Tis not impossible."
Dylan dipped his head and captured her lips, filled with a desperate need to brand her and imbue her with the determination he felt. He slid his arms around her and hauled her small, slender form up against his. Anger and frustration over her refusal to believe they could have a future together pummeled him until she leaned into him and wrapped her arms around him, coaxing him back toward gentleness. He softened the kiss, his lips now teasing instead of inciting. Releasing her, he grasped the sides of her cowl and raised one dark eyebrow.
"Have you so little faith in my brother and the seeds of doubt he sows?"
Alyssa stared up at him, humor entering her deep brown eyes.
"You know about that?"
He smiled. "Michael mentioned it last night when I spoke to him." Kissing her one last time, Dylan forced himself to draw the hood up to hide her face and hair, then led her from the chamber. He settled a hand possessively on her lower back as they turned toward the stairs. Though not as narrow as those at Westcote, the steep steps similarly followed the inner curve of the dungeon and boasted a high stone wall that kept the two of them hidden from view of the great hall. "He would have me believe that half the village has accused the other half of sorcery, and that all are too busy nurturing their fear and loathing of each other to sustain their customary fear of you. Leave it to Robert to find a way to turn the people's fears against them."
"Faugh,"
she whispered, slipping into her aged wise woman voice. Dylan laughed.
"You laugh now, but when you return to Westcote, there is no telling what chaos will reign."
He shrugged. "Methinks 'tis a clever ploy." "And he would welcome the chaos, if 'twould ultimately aid their cause."
"You would." They started down the stairway side by side.
"Why did Robert not accompany you on your journey here? I was most displeased when I saw that he had not."
"I felt very strongly that he would be needed at Westcote.
With Camden dead, I know of no imminent threat."
"Nor do I, yet the feeling persists."
Considering her new gifts, Dylan hoped 'twas just a feeling and not a premonition.
"Was it you, Dylan?" she asked, voice hesitant. "Were you the one who took Camden's life?"
He glanced down at her, wishing he could see her face. "Nay. When they realized their ruse had failed, that my men were not asleep and were rapidly decreasing their numbers, those still able to fell back the way they had come. We followed them into the tunnel."
"Oh, Dylan."
"Since you were there yourself, in a manner of speaking, you know the conditions for fighting were less than adequate. 'Twas narrow, inhibiting movement, and dark, more so after they extinguished all but two torches. Faces were largely indiscernible. Did my men not assiduously keep their armor shined and polished, I fear we would have had a much more difficult time distinguishing friend from foe. 'Twas not until we had dispatched them all that light was brought in, and we were able to search the corpses for Camden."
"And he was there?"
"What was left of him. He had taken a mace to the face, amongst other grisly things. His hair and eye color identified him more than aught else." Since he was touching her, she no doubt felt how much he regretted not being the one to strike the death blow. Did she think less of him for it? Her cowl swung from side to side as she shook her head.
"Nay, he tried to kill you, and mayhap tried to kill Robert as well in the attack that left Robert limping to Westcote's gates."
Dylan had considered as much.
"You sent the body to Westmoreland?"
"Aye, I thought Lord Everard would want the boy buried beside his mother."
Dylan dreaded the response he would receive, if he received one at all. When they reached the bottom of the stairs, just outside the great hall, Alyssa paused and turned toward him, enough to face him, but not enough to shake his hand from her back.
"He will place no blame with you, Dylan,"
she said, knowing his thoughts.
"Camden incurred the king's wrath with his avarice and arrogance, injured your brother, mortally wounded you, and would have slaughtered your men where they slept had you not stopped him,
and nigh caused your death as well.
You should feel no regret. Lord Everard knows the truth about his son."
Dylan sighed. "He is the closest thing I have had to a father in recent years. I would not wish to lose that."
"You will not."
He tried to take comfort in her certainty.
"Ere you begin your duties, I would appreciate it if you would take me to your men. I have waited overlong to see to them."
"Simon took care of them after your arrival yesterday. They are all rested and have been sent to aid in the construction in the village. 'Twould take every able body to make the repairs before the first snowfall."
"Not the men who accompanied me," she clarified. "Those who fought beside you in battle. 'Tis time I saw to their wounds."
Dylan abruptly moved away, severing all contact.
"'Tis not necessary."
Her cowl tilted.
"None were injured?"
Shrugging, he glanced back up the stairs. "Their wounds are paltry at best. You need not concern yourself." 'Twas the first time he could recall lying to her, but he could not bear the thought of her harming herself to heal them.
"I have seen the wounds you consider paltry," she scoffed. "'Twould not take much for them to lead to either death or loss of limb, particularly with your men's penchant for treating them with a dirty piece of cloth tied tightly about them."
He would wash the cursed wounds himself if 'twould prevent her from using her gifts to heal them.
"'Tis just a scratch here and there, not life-threatening."
Alyssa crossed her arms over her chest and said naught. Dylan fought the urge to squirm beneath her unseen regard. When she reached out to touch him, he backed away. He did not want her to know his thoughts.
"All right, Dylan, what do you hide from me? Why do you seek to keep me from your men?"
"You worry for naught, I tell you,"
he stalled. He would have to discuss this with her sooner or later. He would just prefer to do so later. She straightened, lowering her arms to her sides.
"Do they hate me so much now that they no longer wish me to heal them?" she asked in a small voice, her whisper forgotten for the moment.
Regret filled him. "Nay, I would not have you believe so, for 'tis not true. I am the reason." He extended his hand toward her with resignation. Hesitantly, she took it. Her shoulders relaxed. "Dylan," she said indulgently, covering their clasped hands with her free hand and stroking his. "The pain is fleeting." "Any pain is unacceptable."
"Unacceptable to you, but familiar to me. I am accustomed to it. I have lived with it all my life and know how to control it."
When he would have interrupted, she squeezed his hand.
"Nay, what you saw was uncommon. 'Twas a unique situation, Dylan. You were minutes from death. 'Tis not the same when I heal less severe wounds."
"I saw the scars," he reminded her in a low voice, still furious with himself for having caused them. Sighing, she dropped his hand and threw hers up in the air.
"What would you have me say? 'Twas my own selfishness that resulted in those, Dylan. As endearing as the few scars you bear are," she said, referring, he assumed, to the faint scar at his chin, the one that divided his eyebrow, and those that decorated his hands.
"I did not wish to see you further marked, so I pushed myself and my gift further than I normally would. You are perfect as you are. Can you blame me for wanting to keep you so?" That admission, belted out in as close to a normal voice as she had ever dared use in a place where they might be overheard, brought him to a stuttering halt. She thought him perfect? Dylan frowned and grumbled, stunned to feel a warm flush creeping up his neck.
"Nevertheless, I will heal your men, Dylan," she declared, implacable. "Whether it be now or as soon as your back is turned, I shall leave it up to you. I would remind you, however, that putting it off and allowing the wounds to fester will only result in more pain when I eventually get my hands on them."
He swore. She smiled.
"I knew you would see it my way."
"Contrary, disrespectful, but utterly loyal," she quipped, folding her hands placidly in front of her.
"Now, shall we go?"
"Very well," he barked. Scowling, he continued forward, marched through the castle doors, and headed for the tower in which the men were temporarily garrisoned. "But we shall do it my way."
"As you wish, my lord," she said, a smile in her voice.
Two figures stepped from the shadows nigh the great hall's entrance, unnoticed by the quarreling duo. For several long minutes, they stared after the couple, then looked at each other.
"I know not what to make of that," Simon said, his face wiped blank by surprise and confusion.
"Nor do I," Michael responded, equally baffled.
"What do you suppose all that about the pain was?"
"I know not. It almost sounded as if healing us harmed her in some manner." Simon grimaced.
"I like not the sound of that."
"Nor do I." Michael frowned, recalling the many times she had healed him over the years, easing his suffering during his many attacks. He hated to think that such had caused the elderly wise woman pain.
"Her voice seemed changed as well."
"Aye, 'twas odd.
So unlike her. Almost—"
Simon trailed off, seeming flustered.
"What?" "Well, 'twas sweeter on the ears than the raspy whisper we are normally subjected to."
Michael silently agreed.
"And Lord Dylan, did you notice aught amiss with him?" Simon ventured.
Michael nodded slowly. There had been no formal distance between Lord Dylan and the healer, though there always had been in the past. In fact, Lord Dylan had had his hand on her back when they had entered, settled there in an almost absent gesture of affection, and the way she had taken his hand. 'Twas much the same with Robert at Westcote, now I think on it. Eyebrows shooting skyward, Simon spun toward him.
"Robert? But he has ever been leery of her."
"Not any more, or so 'twould seem. They have been thick as thieves since she healed Lord Dylan." Michael glanced around, then leaned in to whisper,
"I thought for a moment, ere we left, that Robert was going to embrace her."
Simon's mouth fell open.
"Did he?"
"Nay, but she touched his arm, and he covered a hand with his own, holding it in place, so she could not release him."
"Did she strike him down?"
"Nay, They seemed quite fond of each other, he said with a shake of his head. And Robert has made it his campaign to improve the people's attitude toward her. You would not believe what has transpired there since you left. Your wife has even befriended her. Anne-Marie? Aye, Anne-Marie seems to have found quite a bit of favor with Lord Dillon, too. Simon's expression darkened. Just what are you implying, Michael? Michael raised his hands in a gesture of peace. Not what you believe I am. I suspect he is only grateful because she aided the healer in caring for his wounds. Did she? Aye, but only for a few days. His feathers slowly unruffling, Simon relaxed. All right, then. Michael cast him a worried frown. Although, as your friend, I should warn you. Simon's hackles rose again.
What?
'Tis just that I overheard some of the men talking, and I do not agree with them in the least, but... He cleared his throat uncomfortably. Simon was known for having a rather fiery temper. They seem to believe that Dillon has taken Anne-Marie as his leman.
The roar of fury Simon emitted was nigh as fearsome as Dillon's. Michael's eyes widened upon hearing it, then swiftly squeezed shut when Simon's fist connected with his nose. Michael staggered back a step, then moaned and cupped his throbbing nose with his hands.
"'Tis not true!" he growled, as pain careened through his head and blood poured over his upper lip.
"'I know!' Simon shouted.
"'Then why did you strike me, you horse's arse?'
"'Because I am angry and you are here!' he gritted,
then sighed and visibly fought to leash his fury.
"'Forgive me!'
Stepping into the entrance to the Great Hall, he motioned to someone out of Michael's line of sight. A servant girl approached.
"'Have you a cloth?'
Simon asked her.
"'My friend here has suffered an accident.'
"'Accident my arse,' Michael mentally grumbled. Mayhap he should not have told Simon. The servant hastened to hand Simon a cloth she pulled from a pocket in her skirts. As Simon offered the cloth to Michael, his face full of apology, the girl hurried away. Michael dabbed at the nose that felt twice its normal size. Pain continued to radiate through his head from it, making it feel as though someone kept hitting him in the face with his shield. The damned thing bled profusely, too. Tilting his head back, he studied Simon carefully.
"Dillon would not betray you in such a way."
Simon nodded.
"He would not betray me at all. My anger is directed at the men who spoke ill of my wife, not Lord Dillon."
Michael nodded, relieved. A few minutes later, he lowered the cloth.
"How does it look?"
Simon grimaced.
"I fear the ladies will not think you so pretty now."
Warm liquid again slipped down over Michael's lips. Swearing, he once more raised the cloth to his now unsightly nose. Chapter 15. When Dillon had informed Alyssa that she would undertake the healing of his men his way, she had had no idea what he intended. The first floor of the tower to which he led her was divided into two chambers. She knew not what purpose they had previously served, but they were now being utilized as sleeping quarters for Dillon's soldiers. Each sported neat rows of pallets, a couple of long benches, and his men's gear, which was haphazardly strewn about. Dillon evacuated one chamber and led Alyssa over to a bench, settling her upon it, whilst the servants retrieved her bag of medicines and the other items she would need to cleanse and bandage the wounds. He ordered any and all wounded men to line up outside the large oaken door. When all was ready, she waited curiously to see what he would do. One by one, under her fascinated, amused, and intermittently irritated gaze, he allowed the men to enter. Dillon firmly closed the door behind each new patient, shuttering the curious gazes of those who would follow. He then blindfolded the victim, led the already uneasy man to the bench in front of Alyssa, and directed him to seat himself. At Dillon's silent command, Alyssa then removed her cowl and bared whatever part of her body she intended to heal on the wounded man. She had not understood the reason for this until Dillon had touched her and silently informed her that he planned to watch her carefully for any signs of pain, to be certain the wounds did not open upon her own skin, and to ensure she did not push herself too far, as she had with him. None of that happened, of course. She healed the wounds partly with her hands and partly with herbs, as she normally did. 'Twas less of a strain that way. Dylan stopped her only twice, immune to her glares of reproof, all over a little grimace she had been unable to suppress. She knew not whether she wanted to hug him for his concern or strangle him for his heavy-handedness. When the last man had been healed and hurried to take his leave, the blindfolding and Dylan's bizarre behavior had certainly not eased the people's fear of her, Alyssa was surprised to see Michael step into the doorway. Bowing sheepishly, he held a crimson-stained cloth to his nose, which bled rather plentifully. "What the hell happened to you?" Dylan demanded. Her ears straining to catch the words, Alyssa thought Michael muttered something about striking the messenger. "What?" Dylan asked impatiently. Verily, his mood had deteriorated with every man she had healed. Rolling her eyes, Alyssa whispered, "Come here, Sir Michael, let me look at it."
"'Tis not as bad as it appears, I am sure, healer," he slowly approached. "I just cannot seem to stop the bleeding and wanted to ask you what I should do."
Dylan raised one eyebrow. "Aside from staying out of the path of other men's fists?" Poor Michael. His face went nigh as scarlet as the blood that coated his hand at that sarcastic aside from his lord. Alyssa bit her lip to keep from laughing.
"Sit down and lower the cloth."
As gently as she could, she ran her fingers over the swollen bump, finding two places his nose had broken. Her eyes widened. Simon, of all people, had hit him. "Oh, dear." She spoke involuntarily, shocked by the idea that leapt from his mind to hers. Both men snapped to attention. Dylan yanked her arm away as Michael watched her carefully, noting his lord's actions.
"What is it?" 'Twas Dylan who growled that question, worried that she had experienced some pain.
Refining her whisper, she shook her head.
"'Tis broken in two places. I must heal it with my hands."
Michael instantly looked as if he wished he had not come. His eyes widened when Dylan retrieved the blindfold and moved to stand behind him.
"You must not, my lord," she protested. "'Twill cover the breaks and interfere."
Only Alyssa saw his responding glower as she waited with some measure of trepidation for his response. Would he refuse to let her use her gift? Would she be forced to oppose him in front of Michael? To disobey him? Because she would, if it came to that. She would not allow Dylan to forbid her the use of her healing ability.
"Michael," he snapped.
"Aye, my lord."
"Close your eyes."
The man did so, unquestioning.
"Should you open them ere I bid you to do so," Dylan warned, "I shall blind you as punishment."
Michael paled slightly.
"Aye, my lord."
Grunting his satisfaction, Dylan nodded for Alyssa to remove her cowl. Pursing her lips, she tossed it back and told him with one disgruntled look, "'Tis only a broken nose, Dylan." One dark brow rose as his eyes seemed to say, "You shall do as I say, or you shall not heal at all." Another sigh escaped her. Freeing her hand from her robe, Alyssa placed it on Michael's nose, closed her eyes, and concentrated on mending the breaks.
Heat raced through her body, down to her arm, then to his nose.
Soon her own began to ache. Bone shifted position beneath her fingertips, weaving itself back together. Something warm began to tickle her upper lip.
"Cease!"
Startled by Dylan's abrupt command, she jumped and released Michael, whose eyes remained steadfastly screwed shut. Her gaze flew to Dylan. Jaw clenched, he leaned forward around Michael and drew his finger across the skin beneath her nose. It came away wet with her blood.
"No more," he ordered in a tone that brooked no argument.
Alerted to his distress by his touch, she nodded and raised her cowl. Dylan moved to stand beside her.
"You may open your eyes, Michael."
Complying, Michael raised a hand to his nose and explored it experimentally. It was straight once more, no longer bleeding. The throbbing and much of the swelling had vanished as well.
My thanks, Hela.
She nodded. Return to the village and aid in the repairs, Dylan bid him curtly.
Aye, my lord.
Standing, Michael bowed respectfully. He froze for a moment as he started to turn away. Alyssa saw his gaze go to Dylan's fingers, still painted with her blood, then fly to her. In the next instant, he was gone. Dylan kicked the door shut, then returned to her side and lowered her cowl. Picking up one of the clean cloths she had set aside to use as a bandage, he grasped her chin and tenderly dabbed her nose with it, wiping away the blood. I like this knot, Alyssa, he told her. I know. Her body had already begun to heal itself. The bleeding ceased even as he watched. 'Twould not have affected me at all, she assured him with a smile, were I not weary from healing so many other paltry wounds before it. Dylan dropped the cloth with a groan and pulled her to him, locking his arms around her as he rested his cheek upon her hair. When Dylan and Alyssa emerged from the castle, they found Michael deep in conversation with a knight whose back was to them.
"Does no one around here follow orders?" Dylan snapped, startling them out of their huddle.
Michael's companion turned.
"Simon,"
Alyssa whispered. His eyes flew to her cowl, as did Dylan's.
"Aye, wise one," Simon asked.
"I would speak with you in private."
She wanted to thank Simon for trusting in Dylan's honor rather than in the foul rumors Michael had exposed, and to suggest that mayhap 'twould be best if he kept a tighter rein on his temper in the future, either that or unleash it upon the source of his anger rather than whomever happened to be standing in front of him at the time. Dylan eyed his second-in-command with suspicion. The large man swallowed nervously.
"Have I done aught to displease you, wise one?"
"Nay."
But she did not want to mention the rumors in front of Dylan.
"There is a matter I would discuss with you if—"
She felt a tug on her sleeve. Frustrated at being interrupted, Alyssa stopped mid-sentence and turned to Dylan.
"I?"
He glanced down at her. "You wish my aid in this?" She frowned up at him.
"Nay, I—"
Again her sleeve was pulled. Alyssa drew in a quick breath and eyed the space between them. 'Twas not him. Dylan had not touched her. He had not moved at all. Confused, she looked to her left, to her right, behind her. All inhabitants of the bailey were hard at work and paid her little attention.
"Wise one?"
Dylan's voice drew her attention back to the men. Simon and Michael regarded her cautiously. Dylan watched her with some disquiet, most likely cursing his inability to view her features. She felt yet another tug, this time on the hem of her robe. Glancing down, she stifled a gasp. Written in the dirt just in front of her, as though drawn by a finger, was the word orchard. Her head jerked toward the neglected, thickly overgrown orchard that peeked around the corner of the dungeon.
"You men have work to attend to," she whispered, surreptitiously swiping a toe through the dirt. "We shall speak of this later."
Dylan caught her arm when she would have left. "All is well, Sia?"
"Aye, I have neglected my duties, my lord. 'Tis time I discovered what medicinal plants Pinehurst has to offer until some of my cash from Westcote can be retrieved."
Accepting her explanation with some reluctance, he let her go. Ignoring her audience's inquisitive gaze, Alyssa headed straight for the trees. By the time she reached the corner of the dungeon, she practically skipped in her haste. The tall grasses at the edge of the orchard parted as she approached, inviting her within. She smiled now, knowing who had summoned her, and began to run. Through weeds, past errant saplings, into the shadows, out of sight of the bailey, cursing branches that ripped the cowl from her head and sought to detain her from her quest. Ducking beneath a low-hanging branch, she caught a glimpse of a man up ahead and stumbled to a surprised halt. Her eyes widened. This was not whom she had expected to find waiting for her. As she stepped nearer, she saw that he was a boy, not a man, as she had first believed. Not much taller than herself. His clothing was filthy and tattered, the hat that hid his eyes beyond redemption. Legs braced apart, arms folded across his chest, he stared at her insolently, saying naught.
"Forgive me, I thought you were..."
Squinting at his features, she discerned a hint of familiarity.
"Meg?"
Bright, feminine laughter filled the orchard as her visitor doffed the hat, allowing shoulder-length raven curls to tumble forth.
"At your service, cousin."
Laughing, Alyssa hurried forward to embrace her. "Why are you garbed like a boy?" she shrugged. "People leave me be when I travel so clothed." Alyssa wrinkled her nose and took a step back. "Mayhap 'tis your aroma and not the clothing that keeps them at bay." Megan laughed. "Well, when one spends one's time searching musty caves littered with animal droppings, one can hardly emerge smelling of flowers."
"Musty caves?"
"I shall explain in a moment. First, how fare you, Alyssa? We have all been so worried about you."
She smiled.
"I am well, as you can see. Geoffrey wanted to return to Westcote to see how you fared, but feared Lord Humphrey would mark his absence."
Alyssa frowned. "Another battle?"
"Aye.
There seemed to be no end to them on Browston lands, and, since Lord Humphrey lacked the large, disciplined army Dillon maintained, the peasants were often called upon to fight."
"I would have come sooner myself," Meg said, "but grandfather cannot travel, and 'twas difficult to talk him into letting me come alone."
"You should not have come alone. You should have waited for Geoffrey." 'Twas not safe for any woman to walk the roads unescorted. 'Twas one of the reasons Alyssa so rarely visited her family.
"Faugh! I need no man to protect me. I have my gift. If any man threatens me with a weapon, I can rid him of it and fling it back at him with a thought."
'Twas the truth. Meg had been born with the ability to move objects with her mind. But Alyssa now knew from experience that killing a man, even a villain like Gavin, was neither easily done nor easily forgotten.
"Well, I am glad you are here."
Meg looked her over carefully.
"'Tis happy I am to see you so well. Verily, I know not how you survived."
"You saved me, you and the others."
"Thank you, Meg. I am in your debt. You are as a sister to me. There is naught I would not do for you."
"And there is naught I would not do for you," Alyssa responded, meaning every word.
"You must promise me you will never be so foolish again," Meg entreated. "You cannot sacrifice yourself for him, Alyssa."
"I fear I cannot make that promise." Meg took her hand and gave it a squeeze.
"You love him still?"
"More every day." With a sad smile, her cousin drew Alyssa over to the stump of a tree that had been felled by lightning.
"He is an owl,"
Alyssa sighed.
"I am aware."
"He can never be yours," Meg reminded her gently. "He must wed a woman of noble birth."
"I know."
The slim hope Robert had raised in her crumbled. He and Dillon seemed to be the only ones who thought the circumstances of her birth and her station at Westcote meant naught. For a moment, Alyssa had begun to believe them and hope that she and Dillon could have a life together. Meg did her a kindness now, ensuring she saw the truth of the matter.
"Tell me of your cave explorations," Alyssa requested, wanting to change the subject.
"What do you seek in them?"
"Not what, but whom."
The two attempted to make themselves comfortable on the lumpy wooden natural bench, then gave up and sat on the ground.
"I seek the gifted ones who helped us heal you," Meg said at last.
Alyssa frowned. "Dillon said there were 7 of you."
"Aye, but only 6 of us were gifted ones. The one called Seth allowed Matthew to accompany us, so he would not worry."
The tale she told next was a fantastical one, of Seth coming to Megan's door and taking her, in the blink of an eye, from her home to Browston Lands to find Geoffrey, then to Alyssa's mother, then to Westcote.
"You said there was another with Seth?"
"Aye, his name was Roland, but he spoke very little. He said only that Seth is the eldest and most powerful amongst us."
"Did you not say Seth appeared young?"
"Aye, no older than Lord Dillon. 'Tis a mystery, is it not?"
Alyssa nodded.
"In truth, I knew not there were any others out there. I thought our family the only ones born with unusual gifts."
"As did I."
Meg shook her head.
"I know not who Seth is, but I sensed such immense power in him, Alyssa.
'Twas he who told us you would not perish if we healed you, and, since your grandmother lacked the strength to do so alone, showed us how to help you."
"Dillon said as much, but I know not how you did it. Only Grandmother has the healing gift. Roland was a healer, too. I think Seth was as well, but he did not participate. He just told us the healers could draw strength from the rest of us, and 'twas exactly what happened when we healed you. Alyssa shook her head. 'Twas not all that happened. She explained the changes that were taking place within her. Her visions, her ability to read thoughts. Meg stared, her gaze fascinated. You've acquired new gifts? Aye, and have little control over them. I have never heard of such, nor have I. They sat in silence for several long moments, wooed by the birds singing in the tree limbs above them. Who is this Seth? Alyssa asked. How does he know so much more than the rest of us? I know not, but he is more powerful than all of us combined. And tall, she marveled. Seth was so tall that he even dwarfed Lord Dillon. Alyssa could not imagine it. Dillon was the tallest man she had ever met. I intend to find him, Meg said again, as a determined gleam entered her brown eyes. Alyssa did not attempt to dissuade her cousin, knowing such would prove fruitless. Long moments of quiet passed. Why a cave? Alyssa asked curiously. I asked your mother to seek him in a vision, and she saw him in a cave with a shadowy figure. So I searched everyone I came upon on my way here. 'Tis not much of a guide. I know, but how long can a giant go unnoticed? Meg gave Alyssa a speculative look. So what does your handsome warrior Earl think of you now that he has seen you unshielded by your robes? Alyssa forced a smile. He thinks himself in love with me. Meg bit her lip and again took Alyssa's hand. Oh, dear. You are quiet, my lord. Dillon pried his eyes away from Alyssa's hands and glanced at her face. She had not looked up when she had spoken. Her attention seemed riveted to the dried herbs she currently ground into powder, yet another treatment she prepared for the neglected people of Pinehurst. A month had passed since her cousin Megan had visited. A strange young woman, that one. During that time, much had been accomplished. Dillon spent every day from sunrise to sunset laboring alongside his men, shoring up the keep's defenses, making repairs, tearing down structures that were unsound and replacing them with new ones. In the evening, he retired with Alyssa to the Lord's Chamber, which also served as the solar and had rapidly become their haven away from duty and prying eyes. The people at Pinehurst, like all those weighted by superstitions, were wary of the healer and feared her peculiar gifts. Yet they seemed to lack any real hostility toward her, mayhap because they had quickly come to understand the value Dillon placed on her, and did not wish to displease their new lord in any way. He was, after all, turning out to be much more generous than his predecessor, though Simon told him they found his presence formidable and his reputation downright frightening. Their manner toward Alyssa was more one of caution than hate. She had visited many of them in their crumbling huts, asking after their health, which more oft than not had suffered under Camden's brutal rule. Though all feared having her heal them with her hands, something only permitted in Dillon's presence, behind closed doors, whilst blindfolded, they treated her with respect and always thanked her for her troubles. Each night, as Dillon sharpened his weapons or mended any number of items that required care at Pinehurst, Alyssa worked diligently at the table he had ordered installed in the solar, filing away the herbs she had collected and mixing her miraculous cures. Sometimes they toiled in companionable silence. Other times they laughed and talked and teased. They even sang on occasion. This night differed, however. The hush that gradually settled upon their shoulders was heavy, with words unspoken. Seated at one end of the table, Dillon found himself watching her, as was his wont. Her lovely profile, the graceful curve of her throat, the full breasts nigh hidden beneath the material of her robe, the thick braid that dangled down her back and danced with every movement, the motions of her dainty fingers. And, as he watched, his own hands grew slack, forgetting the task he had assigned them. You are quiet, she repeated now. Aye. Does aught trouble you? Aye, he
he confirmed. An expectant pause ensued as she waited for him to speak his mind. I fear you have been less than honest with me, Alyssa. Her head snapped up, her lips parting slightly in surprise. What? You have not been honest with me. Her brown eyes widened in astonishment. You accuse me of lying? Mine own eyes have confirmed it. She frowned at him with dawning aggravation. I have never lied to you, Dylan. If your eyes tell you otherwise, then 'tis they who have been untrue. He shook his head. You are keeping something from me. I would know why. A strange expression flitted across her face as she fell still. Releasing the mortar and pestle, she turned to face him, one arm resting on the table, the other at her side. Do you deny it? He persisted when she said not. What is it you believe I have kept from you? She asked carefully. 'Tis obvious to any who have eyes and care to see, he retorted, his gaze dropping to his target. The hand at her side twitched, as though she had instinctively begun to raise it, then thought better of it. Dylan, she began. He looked up. Her expression had softened, her eyes pleading for understanding, but he did not let it move him. Why did you not tell me you had acquired other powers during your healing? He asked, hurt that she had not. Her brows drew together. Powers? Powers, gifts, you know of what I speak. I did tell you of my new gifts, the first morning I awoke in this chamber, do you not remember? I remember well, but you failed to disclose the whole of it. Alyssa folded her arms across her chest. I told you of my ability to read thoughts. I told you of the visions. What more could there be? Your ability to move objects without touching them. She opened her mouth to respond, then shut it again. What? Why did you not tell me you can move objects with your mind? Dylan knew not what response he had anticipated, but the laughter that abruptly escaped her caught him unawares. I have been with you for 7 years, yet your rare jests continue to surprise me. Eyes sparkling, teeth flashing in a wide smile, she drifted closer until she stood between his knees. Dylan struggled to hold on to his anger as she leaned her body into his and slid her hands up his chest and around his neck. She was so small, and he so large, that even seated he was taller than her. Move things with my mind, she murmured merrily, her lips lifting to meet his, making his heart race. I love it when you tease me, Dylan. His arms closed around her of their own accord as her mouth settled upon his and stole his breath. The intimacy they shared amazed him more every day, extending so much further than the lovemaking they lost themselves in when darkness fell and the rest of the keep slumbered. A look, a touch, a melding of lips— they were both so hungry for affection. Dylan had always been secure in the love of his brother. How often they had hugged or draped an arm around one another's shoulders, slapped each other companionably on the back, or rumpled each other's hair in jest. He had thought little of it at the time, mayhap taking it too much for granted. But Alyssa, she had been so isolated for most of her life, feared, hated, ostracized, utterly untouched. Even he had avoided physical contact with her, touching her rarely when not employing her gifts, ensuring that a respectful distance remained between them at all times, never considering how much she might need an occasional brush of his hand. However, now that their relationship had changed and deepened and evolved, Dylan could not keep his hands off of her. Whenever they were alone, he felt compelled to touch her hair, tunneling his fingers through it if she left it loose, or smoothing his hand over it when it was not, tucking wayward strands back into place. The silky texture of her cheek always seemed to beckon, demanding a brief caress. Her shoulder fit so perfectly beneath his large palm, 'twas only natural that it would itch to go there. And even more natural for his fingers to glide down her arm to link with hers. The small of her back, the curve of her hip, the stubborn thrust of her chin, her tiny feet, that special place behind her ear that called out for a nuzzle, the little crinkle that formed between her brows when she was concentrating or angered, all drew him like a magnet, their pull irresistible. 'Twas new to him,
this adoring yet non-sexual compulsion to touch her and display his affection, and the more he gave into it, the more comfortable Alyssa seemed to grow with his love, surprising him with similar gestures of her own, like this kiss that awakened within his body desires he dare not give into until this matter was settled. But 'twas so very tempting. Gathering his strength, Dylan regretfully drew back and set her away from him, severing all contact. Face flushed, lips rosy and slightly swollen, she looked up at him in confusion. Blissful, beautiful, sinfully arousing confusion.
"I assure you I am in earnest, Alyssa," he said, his voice a tad unsteady, and waited for his words to register.
When they did, she took a step back, that beloved little crinkle forming between her brows again.
"You did not jest?"
"Nay." Her head swiveled slowly from side to side.
"Dylan, whatever would lead you to believe such a thing? I move objects the same way you do, with my hands, not with my mind."
Rising, he began to pace. Why did she continue to deny it? How could she persist in speaking falsely after giving him vivid proof to the contrary?
"If you did not wish me to know of your new talent, why then did you display it in my presence?" he asked. "Did you think it would escape my notice?"
She threw up her hands.
"What new talent? The only skills I have displayed are—"
"I saw you move them," he snapped, frustration rising. How could she still not trust him? Shocked by his outburst, she stood mutely before him.
"I saw you move them," he said again, more controlled.
For several long minutes, she stared at him as though he were some inscrutable puzzle she could not fathom how to solve. When at last she spoke, her tone reminded him of that which Thomas often used to soothe skittish horses.
"What did I move, Dylan?"
He gestured toward her work table. "Whilst you were preparing your potions and salves and such, thrice as I watched, you reached for a pouch that was beyond your grasp, and it slid across the table into your waiting hand."
Her brow furrowed.
"I do not understand."
"You moved them, Alyssa, without so much as a touch of your little finger."
"I must have jostled the table, and—"
"You did not."
She chewed her lower lip.
"Mayhap the table is unsteady, and—"
"You notice not. You placed it there yourself and would have noticed such a flaw long ere now."
To confirm his words, he pressed on one corner of the table, which did not move.
"'Twas you, Alyssa. The pouches moved at your command."
"But such is not possible, Dylan. Why do you deny it when just moments ago I witnessed it?"
Alyssa gripped her hands together in front of her and eyed the table, as though she feared the jars upon it would leap up and fling themselves at her. Dylan frowned. Could it be that she had not known? It seemed unlikely, yet her surprise and unease appeared to be genuine.
"Could you not have imagined it?" she suggested hopefully, face falling when he shook his head.
"I do not understand," she said again. Regretting his burst of temper, Dylan moved forward and wrapped his arms around her. "Did you truly not know, sweetling?"
"Nay."
She sounded a bit dazed. As well she should be, he supposed. Dylan thought that, of all the gifts she had demonstrated, this one was the most daunting. Well, nay, that was not precisely true. Her newfound ability to appear before him in visions and project that lovely translucent image of herself wherever he may be was more unsettling, though not unwelcome. He treasured every glimpse he was given of her. Even so, seeing objects move at her command, silent or otherwise, had made his breath stop.
"I should not have shouted," he told her gruffly, unused to offering apologies.
She tightened her hold about his waist.
"Had I thought what you thought, I would have shouted."
Sighing, Dylan pressed a kiss to the top of her head and leaned back so he could look down at her.
"I thought you kept it from me a purpose, as you did the others, because you feared I would spurn you if I knew the truth."
When she smiled up at him, he smoothed his hand over her hair, once more compelled to caress.
"It angered me to think you had so little faith in me."
"Nay, I was wrong in that. I know that now. And had I known that those were not the only gifts I had acquired, I would have told you. I do have faith in you, Dylan. Whatever the future may bring, never doubt that."
Bending his head, he brushed his lips across hers in a gentle kiss. "My temper is atrocious," he muttered. "Your temper is endearing," she retorted. Dylan stared down at her in horror. "Endearing?" Men throughout the continent quailed at the mere sight of his scowl, and this little bit of a woman claimed his temper was endearing? Her lips twitched, his eyes narrowed. "Only when directed at me and driven by love," she conceded, kissing his chin. He snorted, reveling in her attentions. "You are making me soft, I vow." "'Twas not what you told me last night," she teased, her smile turning provocative. His body instantly rose to the bait. "Do not think you can succeed in distracting me from my purpose, wench. You have yet to admit to possessing your new gift." Her lips pursed in a pout. "'Tis difficult to acknowledge a gift I have never utilized." "Knowingly," she added at his pointed look. "Then do so now." "Now?" "Aye. Demonstrate your new gift for me so that you may be convinced it can be done." "Oh, I know it can be done," she muttered. "I have seen Meg do as much many times." "Not whilst she was here." "Aye, she did. 'Twas how I knew she awaited me in the orchard." "Hmm." He had noticed naught unusual. Taking her by the shoulders, Dylan turned her so that she faced the table upon which her jars and pots and packets of herbs and medicines were neatly arranged. "Now, choose an object and attempt to summon it to you." She stared up at him, face full of doubt. "Did I speak any words to make the pouches move?" "Nay, you merely reached your hand out and they slid toward you." Nodding, Alyssa drew in a deep breath and dramatically flung her hand out toward the table. Naught happened. "Try again." Lips tightening, grumbling beneath her breath, she repeated the gesture. A small pot with a loose stopper rattled violently, then sped forward, left the table, and hit Dylan squarely in the chest, spilling a foul-smelling, gooey concoction across the front of his tunic. "Oh!" Alyssa's dismayed cry accompanied the sound of the pot shattering as it hit the floor at Dylan's feet, spattering his hose and boots with the rest of its contents. Grimacing over the noxious fumes engulfing him, he saw her pretty umber eyes widen, her mouth fall open. His first instinct was to bellow a protest, his second, to laugh. She looked so horrified, though, that he feared neither would be appropriate, and sought a more diplomatic response. Not bad for a first attempt. I am certain that with practice your aim will become more true, love. No need to worry." Her eyes fell away. She began to nibble her lower lip. He frowned. "What is it?" His eyes began to water from the stench. Did her lip tremble? She met his gaze hesitantly. "You will not be angry?" There it was again. Suspicion rose. Was that a tremble, or was it a twitch? His burning eyes widened. "You did this a purpose?" "I did not believe I could do it," she stressed hastily. "I just thought... well, you were being so lordly about it all, refusing to be distracted when I was trying so charmingly to seduce you, and, she sighed. I did it a purpose." A moment of silence passed. Absolute, reeking silence. Dylan burst into laughter. Brushing her hands aside, he yanked her into his arms and squeezed her close, smearing his tunic against her. "Dylan!" She squirmed and tried to break his hold. Wonderful, musical laughter rained upon him when she could not, pleasuring both his ears and his heart. "Ugh, cease!" "'Twas your fit of temper," he reminded her joyfully. "If I have to smell like this for... how long?" She controlled her amusement long enough to say, "Two or three days." "Two or three days?" She laughed harder. "Aye, then you will too." They wrestled and laughed and tickled and growled and teased until, breathless, they collapsed onto the monstrous bed. Smiles still adorning their faces, they lay on their sides, eyes locked, unspeaking as their pulses returned to normal. "My temper is atrocious," she murmured. "Your temper is adorable," he returned, reaching up to brush his hand over her hair. "I have been so waspish of late. Will you forgive me?"
There is naught to forgive, love. I have yet to find a single thing about you that does not delight me. Alyssa sighed and burrowed her face into his chest, then coughed and hastily drew back, blinking furiously. Dylan laughed. Forgot so quickly, did you?
Aye,
she croaked, then coughed again. Sitting up, he glanced down at the rank stain that darkened his clothing and grimaced. What is the purpose of this foul substance? Is it truly medicine, or did you conjure it up just for me? She sat up beside him with a smile and wiped at her shiny face and watering eyes. 'Tis good for clearing the head and chest. I can vouch for that, he muttered as his nose began to run. I admit I have been tempted to burden those who have been less than kind to me with its use, lead them to believe 'tis a necessary part of the healing process for whatever ailment they have brought to my attention. He grinned down at her. 'Twould be just punishment, do you ask me? Chuckling, she pushed herself to her feet. You know I could not. I know. Reaching out, Dylan drew the fingers of one hand down her pale cheek. Since I was so boorish as to rebuff your earlier attempts at seduction, what say you I make it up to you with a shared bath? Turning her face into his hand, she buried her lips in his palm. Will it be like last night's? His blood warmed just thinking about it. Aye, he promised, then grinned. Only with a bit more scrubbing to rid us of this salve of yours. Laughing, Alyssa stole a quick kiss, then raised her cowl. I shall see to it immediately.